Hey, everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly Podcast. We're coming up on Memorial Day. I wanted to thank everyone who has who served and to thank the family members who have lost folks in the service of our country. This is an important weekend, and we wanted to highlight opportunities for veterans who are leaving the service by talking with Steve Mappa. Steve's the executive director and president of MedTech Vets. He's a vet himself, having served in the Army during the first Gulf War. And later on, he joined one of the most MedTech companies I know, Abiomed. And we'll talk a bit about both experiences. But right now, he's leading MedTech Vets, which is an important organization that's creating an opportunity, creating a bridge for veterans who are leaving the service to find their way into the MedTech industry. And Steve will talk about why that move makes sense, why there are parallels between MedTech and the military, and how MedTech Vets is helping. So it's great to finally speak with Steve and MedTech Vets. I've certainly known about the organization, but haven't had them on, but definitely want to do some more with them going forward with our Device Talks meetings. Before that, of course, we'll have the New Markers Newsmakers. Chris and I spent Thursday and Friday in Minnesota on our MedTech Nerd Tour, highlighting Device Talks in Minnesota, which is happening on June 11th. Registration for Device Talks in Minnesota is strong, but we still have space for you. So make sure you go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register. Go to that very same website to check out our agenda and our speaker list. It's going to be a jam-packed day, kind of a MedTech fair. We'll be talking tech strategy. We'll be talking, hearing how companies are targeting things like cancer and sleep apnea. And we'll have a great conversation at the end of the day with Brooke Story of BD. So lots to hear about. We'll talk IVL. There's a lot. Go to the website. I'm like going through the agenda in my head. Just go to the website, minnesota.devicetalks.com. I'm really proud of this agenda. It's different than our other MedTech meetings. I love our other Device Talks meetings, but this one is going to be fun and I think important and impactful. So make sure you're there. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register and use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. And I'm also working on Device Talks West. The registration for that is open. I'll let you know some of the speakers at the end of the episode. But you can go to west.devicetalks.com to register for that. But we'll worry about that one later. Let's focus on Device Talks Minnesota. Now, Chris and I hit upon the MedTech Nerd Tour in a little bit, right before the New Markers Newsmakers. And we've got our good friend, Associate Editor Sean Hooley with us to talk about all the craziness that's going on in the diabetes space. So I'm sure you'll enjoy this conversation. I'm very grateful that you're part of the Device Talks family. And I hope you'll join us at Device Talks Minnesota. All right, well, before we begin this podcast, I want to once again thank anyone who has served our country in the military. And of course, I wish a peace and good thoughts toward those folks who have lost family members and loved ones in the service of our country. That's what Memorial Day is all about. And I hope you find some peace and good memories this weekend. So, all right, let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Woo-hoo! Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom, doing well.
Good to see you over the screen again. Although we had a lovely time last week in the MedTech Nerd Tour.
That's also called like you really got to see cold, rainy, you know, Minneapolis weather and our how bad our traffic can actually get when it just rains. You know, because people forget how to drive in the rain, so it's all good.
As I said before, we pushed record. It really demonstrated that our relationship is rock solid. Now that the fact that we're still friends after 4.5 hours driving in traffic and rain, and we never got sick of each other once. It was quite magical.
I mean, yeah, we're not doing the silent treatment. We're all good. We're not like, it's like, I can't talk to that guy ever again.
Yeah. It helped that we had a Juicy Lucy wait for us at the
end
of the
man.
Day.
So that was the way to go.
That was the way to go. That was
you're a little worried when we pulled up to Matt's bar and you're like, this place, you know, looks like a real dive outside.
I did
and
not
like,
say that. My
I mean,
face
but you were a bit
that.
like, oh, I mean, what are we doing here? Like,
there was
in the Powderhorn neighborhood, you know?
It looked... I love me a good hole in the wall place. It just literally, it was so quiet. I'm like, is it open? Like, I thought maybe it was closed. And we went in there and there's a line. Like, we had to wait 15 minutes to get a table.
They said there'd been a line out the door, like,
yeah,
just a few minutes before.
It was 2 in the afternoon and there's a line for tables. So,
yeah,
that tells you it's a good place.
It's the place. Yeah.
Good French fries, good burgers, good Juicy
Lucy.
Been
initiated into Minneapolis more, Tom. You've had your Juicy Lucy, so there you go.
We are going to have the Device Talks Minnesota after party at Matt's bar. I'm just announcing that right now, yeah. So we'll run shuttle
buses. Be
careful,
if they're listening, they're going to get an extra few cases of beef or something, you know? They got
No, I think probably
grill more burgers. They're all coming.
We'll stay closer to the university, I think. So
there we go. Maybe.
Anyway, we've got some.
Maybe
some...
we go to Annie's Parlor in Dickeytown. They've been slinging burgers for a long time too. So.
All right, Sean Hooley is with us, associate editor.
Yes,
and I just Chris keeps making up these words and for neighborhoods like Dinkytown and things like that. I don't think they're real.
It's real. I mean, come on. I mean, Boston has some names. I mean,
no, we certainly have some names for sure. Yeah.
Gonna go over to the North End, have some Italian, you know. All that
oh, I know,
stuff,
but you're just driving around. You're like, there's Dinkytown. I'm like, I think he's just making stuff up to impress me. Like, I don't think he knows what that place is called at all. And there's a Dinky Dome. Was that, does we drove out?
There's a Dinky Dome in Dinkytown. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it was a great trip, and it was good.
The
to
winters
be back.
Are long and cold here, Tom. So I mean, we need to have some fun and have some good. You know, there's a place we go up and pick strawberries at. It's in the town of Nowthen.
Nowthen.
Huh? Yeah, like the farmers are having some fun up there. Like, just call the town Nowthen. Yeah.
The cold weather certainly fosters good senses of humor, as Canada, you know, has produced a lot of funny people, and so has New Hampshire, so, and Minnesota, obviously, as well. All right.
Here we go. All right.
We've got some news to
cover.
Got
that out of our system.
But we will be back on June 11th at Device Talks Minnesota, and we'll be posting some of our videos taken during the MedTech Nerd Tour. Of course, we had a great time at the Medical Alley dinner. And great to see some old friends there and some new ones. So we'll posted all of those on LinkedIn. Definitely looking forward though to being back in town in just a few weeks.
Knock on wood, it's usually nice sunny weather. So
absolutely. All right, Chris Newmarker. But before we get back to planning Device Talks Minnesota, we've got some news of the week to share in the Newmarker newsmakers. A bit of a production note. We're actually recording this on Wednesday morning because I'm taking Friday off and Chris is taking Thursday off. So this is, and we didn't do a Newsmakers last week. So this works just fine.
It's fantastic. There's been a lot of news. And actually, like this Wednesday morning, both me and Sean here were up early on Medtronic earnings, which we will be getting to in these newsmakers. But to start out at number five, we've got Avamed. I really think it's an interesting strategy that they've started to engage in when it comes to trying to shield the medical device industry from all the tariffs going on, which is that they're really like reaching out a lot more and forging closer ties with top trading partners. I mean, just over a week ago, you know, I had a story about a joint announcement between Avamed and the Association of British Health Tech Industries, in which they were calling for for zero tariffs between the United States and Britain, as well as, and this was interesting as well, like a regulatory arrangement in which FDA approval or clearance could also count in Britain, or at least like really help out with getting a regulatory approval in Britain. And just this week I had another story then out you know, about, you know, a similar type of joint announcement now between AvaMed and Swiss MedTech, you know, to do something between the United States and Switzerland. And, you know, I reached out to AvaMed spokesperson, like, are we going to see more of these? And, you know, they pretty much said they are, you know, doing, you know, talks with all kinds of these, you know, types of associations and top trading partners around the world. And yes, we should be expecting more of these coming out. So as, you know, the Trump administration engages in trade negotiations with all these countries, AvaMed's partnering with the MedTech associations in those countries to, you know, lobby to get, you know, zero tariffs for MedTech, you know, shield the industry, you know, from these, you know, from tariffs and these trade deals, and also, like, you know, help out, you know, companies that are, you know, approved here to get regulatory approval overseas in an easier way. So this will be interesting. I think, I mean, you know, I didn't have time to whip up some fondue this morning, Tom, but what do you think? Like, I mean, the next country that is announced, should we have some kind of food related to that country when we're recording the Newsmakers?
Would depend on the country, I suppose. But do we know for sure that this is a response to the tariffs, or was this underway prior? I mean, this to me would seem like something that would take a while to forge, or maybe not. Maybe this is a direct response to the recent move by the Trump administration.
They kind of said they're just like actively, you know, reaching out right now to all these, to all these trade associations. I mean, so
that's great.
Yeah, I mean, so this is really, you know, at the same time they're lobbying in Washington. I mean, Scott Whitaker last week was testifying in front of the Senate Finance Committee. You know, I covered that. You know, like also making the case that, you know, MedTech needed to be, you know, shielded from, you know, from these tariffs, and, you know, kind of making the case too that this wasn't just like, you know, shielding an industry that's important in the United States, but that, you know, this is about making sure that, you know, MedTech innovations are, you know, available for, you know, people who need them, and, you know, and tariffs hinder delivery of those kinds of innovations.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a great move by AdvaMed. I cheer them on. Anything to elevate the profile of the medical device industry. And I think our next country should be Ireland, and Sean Hooley should be our MedTech ambassador to Ireland.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think we need to set him up there. So we'll work on that. All right, Sean,
does that sound appealing? It's Sean Patrick Hooley. I mean, it's perfect.
Sounds good to me.
He'll blend right in. All right, Chris Newmarket,
let's
roll.
You think we could get away with having a pint of Guinness then, like if it's Ireland?
I think we could certainly swing that. Yes.
Oh, there we go. All right.
I think the budget will allow for a pint of Guinness.
There we go.
We'll certainly have some of those on the evening of June 11th. I assure
there we
you.
Go.
What's number four, Chris Newmarker?
Hey, number four on the list, we've got, you know, actually, this is from Sean here. I mean, Sean, why'd you take off on this? This was like big news out of Dexcom.
Yeah, Dexcom promoted someone who's been there for a very long time to the role of president. It's Jake Leach. He's already the chief operating officer, has been for the last 3 years or so, and he was also named president to sort of expand his role and effectively, you know, put him in charge of overseeing corporate development and strategy efforts at Dexcom. So he's been there for a very long time. He joined the company in 2004, leading the development of sensor electronics for the company's first CGM. And over the past couple of years as COO, he's overseen the launch of G7, the latest generation CGM, and Stelo, which is the over-the-counter option. So definitely, you know, someone with significant experience, someone who's well-positioned to take Dexcom even further, it seems.
Yeah, and, you know, generally when I see these types of announcements, it seems to be really part of, you know, succession planning. I mean, it's usually when you see somebody like this promoted in the president role, it's kind of like hinting, like you know, when our CEO retires, that, you know, this person would be the, you know, the front runner to, you know, to succeed them and become, you know, CEO. I mean, am I thinking about that right?
Yeah, no, we'll see that in number two. I think that's probably the most recent example of that. But that was my question that I was going to ask. Sean, do you think, is there any talk of this being a succession plan or any indication that Kevin Sayre is...
No indication on my end. That is not to say that's...
He hasn't told you, Kevin.
Yeah, no, nobody's told me, but that doesn't mean that tomorrow can't happen. But no, I definitely think, as you mentioned, we're going to talk about a prime example of this in a bit. But definitely seems, you know, like it's at least positioning him to be a viable candidate in the very least.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, just to throw in, I mean, okay, so Kevin Sayer, he's been, you know, CEO since 20, you know, 15. And then his bio on Dexcom's site says that he was, president since 2011. So that was kind of the route that he had up to the CEO spot was, so first he was president a few years and then he moved up to the CEO spot. So.
All right. Well, let's see. We'll watch that story for sure. What's number three,
sorry,
Chris Neumarker?
Can I, one more thing?
Yep.
So I should also note that I saw just yesterday that Sayer has been honored with the San Diego Business Journal's 2025 CEO of the Year Lifetime Achievement Award. So,
oh, wow.
Certainly been in the role for a while. So yeah. Again, that, you know. It's all speculation, but it could lend itself to sort of,
you know,
when you get a lifetime achievement award, it sort of signals that maybe the next phase could be on the way.
Or maybe Kevin will get that award and at the banquet or whatever and say, I'm not done yet.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, let's roll on to number three, Chris Neumarker.
Hey, number three on the list. I just added this in because I thought this case was really interesting. Johnson & Johnson this week getting hit with $147 million verdict in an antitrust case that was, filed by a cardiac mapping catheter reprocessor. The argument here was that, J&J's, Biosense, what we've called in the past the Biosense Webster business, had been, tying, servicing for its, cardiac mapping system with the purchase of brand new catheters, and that this was, hindering, basically like locking out, reprocessors that were, trying to offer reprocess catheters to health providers. The Association of Medical Device Reprocessors were applauding the move. I haven't heard back yet from J&J about this. As far as I know, I need to do another inbox check, but I saw on some other, sites that J&J was saying they're looking at appealing. When I posted this on LinkedIn, it really got a discussion going on LinkedIn. I mean, some people saying like good for the reprocessors, but other people saying like this decision didn't make, any sense. Like, why would you expect if somebody had an analogy, like, why would you expect a tire replacing outfit to service your, to replace your tires you brought in cut rate tires and into the shop, but yeah, it's definitely, I mean, this is like been a growing trend in our industry, and we have these single-use devices, and then there are people saying, but we want to reprocess them and sell them again to health providers, and it looks like the reprocessors had a legal victory this week.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the industry responds to that, for sure. All right, well, let's roll on to number two.
Yep. Hey, number two on the list. This is also from Sean. This was the big news last week. I mean, Sean, why don't you tell everybody about it?
Yeah, last week, Intuitive announced probably the biggest, I suppose, personnel move we've seen in medtech in quite a while, which was the pending departure of CEO Gary Guthart on July 1st, and President Dave Rosa will be promoted to the position of CEO. So similar to what we just discussed with Jake Leach being promoted to CEO, I think it was a couple of years ago that Rosa was promoted to the president role, and sort of priming him to take over when Guthart decides to go. That's the way it's going now, is Intuitive is making a big change.
Yeah, I mean, my gosh, and Guthart's been at Intuitive. I mean, he was part of the original engineering team, that worked on the company's original robots back in the mid 90s, and rose up to become CEO, and since then has the growth that we've seen at Intuitive over at that time period, I mean, my gosh, he I think, took over in CEO about 2010. The market cap of Intuitive was $10 billion. I mean, it's grown 20-fold since then. I mean, they have just, like, locked in a dominance in the soft tissue surgical robotics, you know, space in hospitals, especially in the United States. And, I mean, I know Medtronic's talking about coming in to compete. You know, J&J has something in the works. But, I mean, all these other companies that are doing surgical robotics innovation are kind of doing it around Intuitive. Like, it's you really don't see people like taking them on directly here, because I mean they've really, like, you know, advanced and forwarded the technology, even like launching the Da Vinci 5 last year, which just like kind of like even widened the moat even more for them. I mean, just, you know, all the innovations in that next gen system last year.
Oh, it'll be, I mean, it was seemed to be one of those worst kept secrets sort of thing that Gary Guthart was retiring at some point. I know I had talked to Joe Mullings, a.k.a. Joe Stradamus, a few times, and he talked about it with such certainty that I thought I had missed some news about it. But with Dave Rosa being, as we talked about earlier, being appointed president, it was pretty clear that was the direction this was going. And I don't expect Intuitive to miss a beat with Dave Rosa. I mean, he's got an equally long story, an impressive story with Intuitive. Had the chance to talk to him a couple of times. Super smart, super nice. So we're going to see Intuitive obviously continue to chug along. The other Intuitive news I thought that you had this week, Sean, that was interesting was the Olympus hiring Intuitive's, who had not been there a long time. His name is Slawik Kerner. I hope it's Slawik, Slawek, coming on as now he's Olympus's new Chief Digital Officer for Smart Connected Care. So it's just an interesting move to see someone leave Intuitive, because they don't typically do that. And it just kind of registers also where I think Olympus and others are headed, just the need for smart digital dashboards for endoscopic devices, for surgical robotic devices. The pressure from Intuitive or on Intuitive is not only going to come from a Medtronic or a J&J or SS Innovations or someone else. It's the entire field is moving into this digital dashboard realm. So it's going to be quite a battle going forward. And I think it'll provide better care for patients, which is ultimately what we're all here for. So it's good news for the industry. Good news for folks like us covering the industry, for sure. And we'll see where we're headed. So, all right, Chris Neumarker, what's number one?
Number one, fresh on, I guess we can't say fresh off the presses, fresh on the internet today, this morning. I mean, Sean, I'll let you take the lead on this. I mean, this was like a big news in your diabetes beat.
Sure, yeah. Well, as part of the company's fourth quarter earnings, which Chris will get to, Medtronic did announce this morning, as we speak on Wednesday, that it is going to separate its diabetes business into a new standalone company. It expects that process to take about 18 months. It wants to go the IPO route, which will be interesting to watch in terms of how that company sort of, I guess, works itself out. You know, it's the second sort of large diabetes unit separation in med tech that we've seen over the past few years, with BD spinning off Embecta. But I do think they're very, very different diabetes companies that we're watching. In terms of Medtronic, they sort of tout this whole ecosystem as they have their own pumps, CGMs, smart pens, all sorts of different things. So it's definitely, you know, I imagine a viable company on its own. They wouldn't, you know, separate it if it wasn't. But it's something that sort of has been talked about for years. Like, I remember back in like 2021, analysts were asking Jeff Martha if they were looking to spin off diabetes, and that was that was in the middle of some issues with the FDA warning letters and question marks over the company or over the unit. So now that it's sort of seemingly in a decent place, or has been presenting as in a decent place over the past couple of years, I guess they decided now was the time to spin it out and start something new.
Yeah, I mean, you were alluding to it. I mean, a big turnaround there in recent years. You know, I mean, they had all those warning letters, insulin pumps being pulled off the U.S. market, but now the insulin pumps are back. The revenue's been growing, you know, a lot. I mean, just in the fourth quarter, it was over 10%. You know, but But, you know, kind of one of the big things they were explaining in the earnings call this morning was that, you know, the earnings profile just kind of like doesn't fit in as well with the rest of the company. And, you know, they really think like letting it go off and be its own, you know, independent company, you know, enables Medtronic to kind of like, you know, focus on some of these like high growth areas where they see a lot of earnings potential, including like pulse field ablation and neuromodulation. So and you know, the other big news out of the earnings this morning was that you know, I mean, tariffs, like all these other major medical device companies, are going to be really hitting them on earnings, you know, potentially up to $350 million if this tariff pause with China, you know, reverses, you know, ends up not being permanent. So, spinning off the diabetes business, that does like take a little bit of pressure off them on the earnings. And then, you know, they can get, you know, more focused in some of these higher growth areas, then, you know, they could, you know, maybe they could hopefully like really keep a, you know, keep a good earnings outlook, you know, going even amid tariffs.
On the diabetes side, it's still an interesting sort of company to watch in terms of portfolio. Yeah. Like they've still got their partnership with Abbott, connecting Abbott CGMs with Medtronic insulin delivery technologies. They've got their own next gen CGMs on the way, their own next gen pumps, including a patch pump in development. Obviously, we saw their attempted acquisition of EOFlow out of Korea fall through for a patch pump to rival Insulet. But again, it's something to watch. I mean, I'm looking at, I compiled last year the 9 largest diabetes technology companies by revenue, and Medtronic's diabetes unit was 3rd behind only Abbott and Dexcom. So I expect, you know, that not to change anytime soon. So it's still going to be a major player in the diabetes space.
You'll have some big news to lead off with your diabetes special report, which is coming out this summer. So that'll be really cool.
Is Abbott the only company remaining that is not pure diabetes, or are there others on that list that do diabetes and other devices as well?
Other devices, Roche is on there. Roche is obviously pharma and all sorts of things, but their diabetes care unit is definitely siloed.
Doing a big build out in what was Indiana, Roche's.
Right. Yeah. No, I suppose that's a good point, Tom, because Embecta's on that list and that used to be part of BD, but no longer. Ypsomed sold off its diabetes care unit recently. That was number 8 on the list. And then, yeah, you have Senseonics, Tandem, Insulet, Dexcom, which are all, I suppose Dexcom would consider itself more of a, you know, health focused company than just diabetes now that they're expanding into bio wearables and things like that. But
their bread and butter is still CGMs. So, yeah.
Exactly.
It looks like the industry is, the diabetes industry is just having growing into its own own shape and form, and maybe just doesn't fit with the rest of medtech anymore. Especially, I mean, we saw Ashley McAvoy take over at Insulet. Obviously, she's a medtech person, but I think her consumer background really was a selling point for that as well. And it's really become more of a consumer connected care sort of business as opposed to
Medtronic CEO Jeff Marth. I mean, when he's listing off the things that made diabetes kind of different from the rest of the business, I mean, he mentioned kind of like that go to consumer model that you just don't see with a lot of other medtech. And also, too, I've noticed in the diabetes space, the involvement of the people who have diabetes is like way more than you see with a lot of other disease conditions, you know, with other medical devices. Very vocal group of people.
I have no evidence to back it up, but I would imagine it's one of the loudest sort of patient advocacy spaces in medtech.
In a good way, too.
Yeah. In a good way,
really help drive innovation and adoption. So, all right. Well, a great list, as always. Sean, it was great to actually have you on the show. We mention you almost every time. Another article by Sean Hooley, but
that's
now
right.
You're actually here in the digital flesh to talk about it yourself. So,
fantastic, man!
Always a pleasure.
Before we begin our keynote conversation with Steve Mappa of MedTech Vets, want to let you know that we're rolling out a new feature in the Device Talks Weekly podcast. It's going to be our future MedTech Opportunities Future of MedTech Opportunities feature. You can play with the letters there if you want to see what the series is called. But this is an opportunity for folks to share their sense of where our sector is headed. So if you're interested in being part of our FOMO series, we've got several tiers of opportunities. make sure you reach out to me at tsalemi, T-S-A-L-E-M-I, at WTWHmedia.com, or you connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know what you're thinking about, what you'd like to talk about, and I'll let you know how we hopefully can make it happen. All right, now let's begin our conversation with Steve Mappa. He's once again the executive director and president of MedTech Vets. Well, Steve Mappa, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom. Looking forward to it.
My pleasure. You've got two great stories to tell, three great stories, including your time in the armed forces with the Army, with Abiomed, and now you're leading the MedTech Vets group. So we have a lot to cover. Yeah. So normally I say, how did you find your way into MedTech? I know your answer is a bit delayed than some others. How did you first, what were the first steps of this journey that you're on? How did you find your way into the Army?
Yeah, good question. So my dad was enlisted in the Navy.
Okay.
So, you know, as a kid, he wouldn't talk a lot about it, but he would talk enough about it to generate interest. So, you know, he was mostly in the reserves, but his unit got activated during the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was on an aircraft that would spot submarines, you know, off the coast of Cuba.
Holy moly.
So he had some pretty interesting stories to tell. You know, so then looking at colleges, I was always interested in the military. And, you know, Navy wasn't a good fit for me because I tended to get seasick on both. And the Air Force, you know, I didn't have great vision to be able to fly as a pilot. So, you know, the next choice was the Army. And, you know, I ended up going to West Point, which was not too far from where I grew up. I grew up in Westchester, PA, which is right outside of Philadelphia.
Wow.
And West Point's about 3 hours north of where I grew up, you know, a little bit north of New York City. So, you know, went to West Point, had a good experience, met a lot of great friends, had a good education, played a lot of sports, learned a lot about time management, organization, discipline, things like that. And then when you graduate, you're commissioned as a second lieutenant. So I was a lieutenant in the Army, and I was an armor officer. So I was a platoon leader in a tank unit. And we got deployed during the first Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So it was, you know, so at a young age, I think I was 23, newly married. You know, it was a great experience, a lot of responsibility. We spent time in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. And, you know, one of the greatest honors of my life was, you know, serving alongside America's finest, you know, in the United States Army soldiers. That was a great experience. Learned a lot.
I bet. Well, thank you for that. First of all, I remember that time, and it was a harrowing time. I think we're about the same age. I graduated high school in 87. I remember the buildup to the war, and, I was not in the military, and I remember thinking, what the heck's going on? I can't imagine being in the military during that time, where things were definitely shifting from kind of the Cold War stare down to where you're getting deployed. What was that time like for you?
Yeah, it was kind of scary, to be honest with you.
Sure.
I mean, you know, the mission of the military is to serve in deployments, you know, in conflict, and it really doesn't hit home until it actually happens.
Yeah.
You know, so fortunately we had a lot of good training. We had a lot of good leaders. We had great technology, great soldiers. And, you know, we practiced a lot, you know, which I always remembered. We went through, you know, our mission was to breach the Iraqi minefields. And I was, you know, again, in a tank unit, and we practiced over and over and over and over again. You know, we practiced contingency plans. We practiced at night, during the day, gas masks on, gas masks off. You know, we tried to anticipate any kind of reaction from, you know, the other side. I think that was what gave everybody the confidence to, you know, to perform, was knowing that we had good leadership, we practiced a lot, and, you know, just executed on the mission.
That's amazing. No, and I mean, it was ultimately ended up being a short active conflict, but the echoes went on for decades. I mean, we were still talking about Iraq. Well, still are. So you never know where things are going to go. What happened after after the war? Did you have the option to stay in the military or not? Because the other transitional thing or transformational thing was the military after that war began to say we're shifting focus. We don't need as many soldiers. We're going to start cutting back.
Yeah. So I did not stay active duty. So, you know, I served time and then I got out of the military. And, you know, during the early 90s, there were really no career transition programs like there are today for the military. So sure. MedTech Vets was not around. They didn't have skill bridge programs. You know, I worked with some of the junior military officer recruiters, but I didn't have a great experience with that. So I ended up really just networking. You know, I found my first job out of the military through the friend of a friend from a classmate of mine. He had a friend that worked at a chemical company. It did was a hired degreed engineer. So I have an engineering background and they would teach us to be salespeople. Okay. And that's kind of what I was looking for. I was looking for something that, you know, was, you know, promotion and recognition, compensation was based on performance versus time and grade. So that was something I was really interested in. So I worked at this chemical company for 10 years. I was a sales rep in Minneapolis and a district manager in the Philadelphia area. So I was, you know, didn't even get into med tech until 10 years after the military. So my time in transition was, you know, really extended over a 10-year period. And, you know, eventually got into GE Healthcare in the early 2000s.
What was the reason for the switch? Did you want out of one or did you specifically want into medtech? How did that come to be?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I would say, and we say this a lot with the MedTech Vets group, the veterans, and this was my personal experience, you know, serving in the military, you know, you have this sense of purpose, you know, serving the country, you have a sense of purpose and, you know, serving alongside soldiers. You know, working at a chemical company, it was a good living and it was a good job, but the sense of purpose wasn't necessarily there.
Uh-huh.
And I had some friends, a couple of friends, one in particular, Mike Minogue, who you probably know.
Sure.
He's my classmate from West Point. Oh. And he was working at GE Healthcare at the time. And, you know, we would talk about, you know, different career opportunities. And, you know, he encouraged me to kind of look into it just from a, you know, sense of purpose, technology standpoint. And, you know, I was able to get a job at GE. I was a PET specialist. So we were selling positron emission tomography scanners to cancer centers in the Mid-Atlantic. So I would work with the, you know, the sales and clinical team to do presentations on PET. And, you know, it was a tough transition because I had to translate as, you know, an engineering degree with driving tanks and working as a sales rep for a chemical company. And it didn't really line up with, you know, selling PET scanners for GE. Right. So that was my challenge, was to convince the GE people to, you know, take a chance on, you know, somebody with my background that didn't necessarily have the medical experience. And it worked out. You know, some of the things, you know, learning and growing up in the military, a lot of those skills transition really well into med tech, serving patients, having a sense of purpose, you know, really having an impact with technology and providers, you know, really not that different from the military, but how to convince, you know, people that I could do the job.
Did you have a sense then, and I'd love to ask this question about today, that having that experience in the military is something you needed to overcome, or was it something that gave your resume a boost and got you to the top of the pile?
I would say from my experience, it definitely helped.
Uh-huh.
You know, having the Army experience, the leadership experience,
I hope so.
You know, the West Point engineering degree, all those things I would say helped. But the biggest objection, you know, in changing industries was, and I heard it over and over again, was you don't have any medical experience, so therefore you cannot do this job. You can't be successful in this field. I heard that a lot. So, you know, luckily I had some good coaches and good mentors and, you know, was persistent. And, you know, even when there were people telling me that I couldn't do it, you know, I had to believe in myself and, you know, I had some supporters. And luckily, you know, people were willing to take a chance. And, I just put my head down and just try to, outwork others, and, everything worked out okay.
That's great. So you found yourself, you went to GE Healthcare, then you found yourself at, well, you didn't find yourself there. You moved over to Abiomed. It wasn't something that accidentally happened. Right. Abiomed, I think, is probably one of the more medtech stories. I think just kind of came out of nowhere with a completely different technology, had its own culture, its own story, and ultimately ended with a multi-billion dollar acquisition. So how did you find your way to Abiomed? And I'd love to unpack your experience there just for a couple of minutes as to what went on there.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was opportunity. Uh-huh. Right. So again, I mentioned Mike Minogue's name. Mike was recruited to be the CEO at Abiomed when the former CEO retired.
Uh-huh.
So when he moved, he and I obviously kept in contact with each other, and the company needed a salesperson in Philadelphia. And that's, I was living in Philadelphia.
Perfect.
So, it was an opportunity, and, it went from a big ship from GE, established company and lots of resources to essentially a startup.
Yep.
Abiomed was a 25-year-old science project, as you probably remember.
Yep.
David Letterman was the founder. He was a PhD from Cornell who came up with this total artificial heart idea. And, Mike and team did a good job at, commercializing the science project, right? So I think all the things that, we learned at GE, he was able to surround himself with people, that had the mindset of doing what's best for patients, trying to grow the business, taking care of people, those types of things.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, I worked at the Boston Business Journal and wrote about Abiomed, and I lived one town over. I lived in Peabody next to Danvers. So it was, you're very much, there was the artificial, Dr. Letterman had created a early version of an artificial heart, and that was going to be the main project until ultimately Abiomed shifted focused over to the Impella heart valve. Were you already, did you join before or after that transition?
Yeah, so it was kind of, it was right before.
Right before, okay.
So I started with Abiomed in January of 2005, January 21st, if I remember correctly. It was the STS in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, boy.
And again, I didn't really know anything about cardiology or the space, but really had a lot of faith in the leadership, right? And again, lots of good coaching, lots of good mentors. I learned a lot from physicians, asked a lot of questions, did a lot of listening. At first it was, kind of like GE. At first it was all about those, the cool technology and leading teams and growing a company. But it quickly turned into, again, sense of purpose, right? And it sounds kind of hokey, but, I was a rep, and then I was a region director, and then I was a national sales director and a key accounts director, business development. So in all those roles, had a lot of opportunity to interface with some of the patients, right? So we got to see a heart attack patient who, came in the middle of the night on a helicopter and, really thought that they were not going to live, right? And, the physicians and the clinical team were able to use Impella, and save people's lives.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, ultimately the motto of the company was recovering hearts and saving lives. And it's exactly what it was, so we got to meet a lot of those patients. I got to talk to their families. I heard people say, I got to watch a grandchild be born. I celebrated a wedding anniversary. I got to walk my daughter down the aisle. Those were life-changing experiences, so routinely we would have patients come to Danvers, in the Boston area to Abiomed and meet the engineering team, meet the people that designed and produced the Impella pump. And, it was pretty amazing. I actually have one.
Do you?
On my shelf right here. I was just unpacking in a box. And I have my Impella demo.
Wow, look at you.
Right here in my office.
That's great.
So, yeah.
So I want to unpack the purpose thing, because we talk a lot about that in med tech, and I think it's a genuine feeling that most people, or I hope all people in the industry have, that they are doing good or while doing well. I came into this industry from journalism, where there's a degree of service involved because you're not getting a big salary, but you are serving your industry or serving your community. You, I think, chose a path of ultimate service and at the risk of sacrifice. I'm happy to hear that, you know, the purpose that we all sort of cling to or claim as medtech resonates with you as someone who clearly entered your professional life with a sense of purpose. So you find medtech's purpose to be something very real.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question. It didn't happen on day one.
Yeah.
But, you know, as my career in medtech, you know, advanced through the years, that was probably the consistent theme, right? I mean, we'd go to sales meetings and I would remember Mike Benhoek would say, we're not selling toaster ovens. And that always resonated with me, you know, taking care of patients and their families and interfacing with the doctors and the staff, you know, pretty amazing sense of purpose. No question.
How does that translate? Is it giving an extra hour of time, making an extra phone call, like that purpose? What do you think that it gets you to do? Or maybe you're just spending the same amount of time, but you just have a different level of energy to it. What is that purpose? What did it give you?
Yeah. You know, I would say it really just gave you, you know, satisfaction, fulfillment. Yeah. Fulfillment's probably a better word. Right, serving others and just making their lives better, you know, gave you this certain sense of fulfillment. Right. And even, you know, even now with, you know, with MedTech Vets, you know, the mission of MedTech Vets is to help military veterans transition and find careers in the medical technology world, you know, careers with purpose. Right. And we do that through education, mentoring, and networking.
Uh-huh.
But that's what really spoke to me, you know, when I, you know, made the decision to leave Abiomed after almost 20 years. You know, I was really impressed with the board at MedTech Vets because, you know, all of them are either veterans or business leaders, and they all have this passion for helping veterans, right? This sense of purpose, right? And, you know, the other reason is the mission. You know, the mission is to help these veterans find careers, and the key word is with purpose. Because they're looking for that, serving the country with purpose, bringing patients and families and doctors with purpose. I think that's the key word. And, you know, I was personally in a lot of the veterans that we see today, I was in their shoes, you know, 30 years ago when I got out of the Army.
Right.
And heard all the objections and all the reasons why you're not going to be successful. And, you know, I still hear it today. But it's, again, it's fulfilling just, you know, helping people and serving the community and just, you know, giving them the confidence to know that what they learned, you know, as a military person translates directly into medtech.
That's interesting. Let's talk more specifically about MedTech Vets. Zoom out a bit. What is the organization? How big is it? Entirely how is it structured, but sure. What is its function?
So MedTech Vets, we're a nonprofit. So it's a 501c3.
Uh-huh.
And, there's 13 members on the board of directors, all are volunteers, and we have 3 full-time employees. There's myself and 2 others are full-time, and the other 13 on the board are volunteers, right? So what we do is, again, we're helping military veterans transition and find those careers with purpose in medtech. We do education, so virtual education and in-person education, so things like writing a resume, generating a LinkedIn profile, interviewing, networking, things like that. Mentoring, every veteran that comes through MedTech Vets, we assign a mentor. So the mentor, most of them served in the military, but not all of them. I would say that the key is that they have a passion for helping a veteran make the transition.
Uh-huh.
They're familiar with some of the obstacles, some of the objections, some of the issues in translating their skills from the military world to the civilian language. It's a key part of success. When we interviewed our partner companies and some of our fellows, the number one predictor to success in the transition is if they have an active and supportive mentor.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that's a huge part of the MedTech Vets is the mentoring. And then the networking. So Scott Whitaker, who's the president of AdvaMed, he's a part of our board. He joined last year. Joe Mullings, who's the president of the Mullings Group, joined our board last year as well. And then Ramsey Nuihid, works for Merrill Lynch. Those were the three new board additions when I started in 2024. And I would say that, you know, they're enormous help, mostly on the networking side, because they have contacts everywhere in the industry. So, you know, between the education, the mentoring, and networking, we try to help these veterans, you know, hone their skills, give them confidence to find a job within the medical technology world.
So where do vets need that? You covered sort of the areas that you help them with. Unpacking it a bit. Networking. Uh-huh. Is that part of military life at all? Or, I mean, I think promotions are almost devoid of network. They're given for performance only. I mean, I'm certain there's some personalities involved as well, especially nowadays. But how different is it finding success in the military versus finding success in the commercial field?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, serving active duty or in the National Guard or military, I would say in general, you have a support structure because you're part of a unit. You know, whatever branch or whatever rank you are, you're assigned to a team or to a unit. You know, making the transition, you may or may not be working with a team, especially maybe with a sales role or clinical role or even in finance or marketing, engineering. So, you know, again, we spend a lot of time introducing our partner companies to the veterans, right? And by partner companies, what I mean, AdvaMed. AdvaMed has 600 different organizations. It's a large, I'm sure you're more familiar with them than I am. And, you know, we have a lot of partnerships with those companies. You know, so the ways to partner with MedTech Vets, there's really three ways to partner with MedTech Vets as a nonprofit. So one way is placement fees, similar to some of the recruiters for the right candidates. Number two would be donations and grants, so educational grant or a donation. And then number three is mentorship. Those are really the big three, or the three ways to partner with MedTech Vets. And we introduce, you know, a lot of our partners to veterans because the veterans have a certain skill set.
Uh-huh.
Companies have certain positions that they're trying to hire for, and we try to match them up.
Are veterans, though, do you think they're I found it took me a while to learn how to talk about myself and sort of talk about my accomplishments. And I was very, very much, oh, well, you know, I'm just part of the team. Like, I'm trying to find us all success. And when it came to me applying for jobs and moving forward, I had a hard time taking credit for things that maybe I should have taken credits for. Is that any more or any less the case, you think, with veterans? Because they are part of such a large organization, they're never told to say, no, what did you do? What should we give you credit for?
Yeah, it's a great point, Tom. Absolutely. And I would say this is my personal experience too. You know, as a military person, you're really taught to be a good teammate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give credit to the others and not necessarily yourself. So when we do these various trainings, we do four training cohorts throughout the year, right? And they're anywhere from 5 to 7 weeks. And in each of the weeks, we spend what we call a 30-second introduction. You know, tell me about yourself in 30 seconds or less.
Uh-huh.
That's going to, you know, give a potential employer interest in hiring you, right? So it's really interesting to see from week one, you know, the introduction, you know, some of them tend to be long-winded and not necessarily very specific on an individual accomplishments. And as you get to week seven, you know, it's crisp, it's clean.
Yep.
Concise, and it's, you know, it's much more professional. So when the veterans go into the interview and the interviewer says, tell me about yourself, they can say within 30 seconds, here's why I'm the best fit for your
help.
So yeah, it's a great point though.
That's a great point too. And that, you know, I went on a lot of job interviews from age 20 to age 40. Look, not a lot, but more, you know, I think everyone does. So you learn how to get better at it. Whereas if you're in a place where you're not doing that and suddenly you're 40 and you really haven't gone through, you don't have that ability to learn on your own. So they almost do need a kind of an accelerated, I think, introduction into that skill set, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we practice it just like anything else. You know, like we're giving a presentation or, you know, playing a sport or, you know, playing an instrument. The only way you get good at it is if you practice. So we spend a lot of time on, you know, presenting themselves, you know, as you get into the interview, you know, and just giving them the confidence to be successful.
That's great. How about the translation of skill sets or accomplishments in the military and presenting them in a way to a company, medtech or not, that allows the hiring entity to see the connection? Is that a challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, we one of our slide presentations, we present some of the Pew Research Center. And what this Pew Research Center shows is that over 80% of military people have a difficult time translating military language, right? And it's very similar to some of the HR professionals. They may not know, you know, some of the military lingo.
Uh-huh.
So again, we spend a lot of time on translating what they learned in the military to what will be understood in the civilian world. And it takes practice. So even with the resume and the LinkedIn profile, the one that they come in on week one, it may look a lot different when they finish the program after week five or six or seven.
Are they usually starting a LinkedIn profile for the first time with you?
Some are. Yeah. And again, my personal experience when I worked at Abbeyman, I had a LinkedIn profile, but I didn't really spend a whole lot of time on it.
You're right. Anymore. Yeah.
So, you know, week two, we have somebody talk about best practices for resumes. And then this past time it was Joe Mullings, and he did a tremendous job.
Oh, sure.
Talking about resume best practices. And then LinkedIn is a gentleman by the name of Kip Wolf. He's the CEO of a biopharma company, and he's an expert on LinkedIn. So every time I attend that class, I always try to refine my LinkedIn profile because it needed a lot of help when I started, and, you know, still trying to tweak it. But yeah, absolutely. Some people maybe just start in LinkedIn for the first time.
That's interesting. So what would you like to see MedTech Vets become? What are your goals for the future?
Yeah. You know, last year, so again, I've been here about a year or so. So in the year that I've been here, there were about 60 veterans that came through MedTech Vets.
Right.
And most of the funding, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, has come from the board of directors.
Uh-huh.
So those 13 people that I mentioned, 75% of the funding has been coming from that group.
Wow.
You know, for many years, which I didn't realize until I started here.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. No. And then the other 25% comes from, you know, corporate donations. So, you know, what we're trying to do is to diversify the revenue streams so we can, you know, maybe reach more veterans. So instead of 60 in a year, maybe we can go to 160 or 260 or 360, right? So, you know, so we're trying different things. We're trying to do placement fees for what we're calling an executive program, right? So we're piloting this program, executive program, with some of the academy grads. So Annapolis, West Point grads, you know, college athletes, technical degrees, leadership experience, successful military career.
Uh-huh.
You know, some companies, like when I worked at Abbeymed, we paid a recruiter a placement fee to find somebody like that. And some companies will still do that. So that's one of the things that we're exploring. You know, the other I mentioned was the donations and grants, and then the mentors. You know, the mentors is our key to success. So I would say the future viability of this organization is we want to be able to, you know, diversify the revenue streams so we can reach more veterans. We want to go, you know, much more than 60 in a year. We want to go, you know, 260, 360, 1,000, something like that. But the only way we can do that is if we, you know, find more partners.
How are the veterans engaging with you, and are you turning people away, or?
Yeah, I would say in general, we do not turn people away.
That's good. Yeah.
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 We, MedTech Vets is open to all veterans, you know, regardless of rank, regardless of branch. You know, there's a place for just about any veteran here. You know, and what I've learned on these cohorts is there's a wide variety of experience, you know, so, you know, on the junior end, I remember in the last summer cohort, there was a Navy enlisted gentleman who had 4 years in the Navy. I think he had an associate's degree, and he wanted a job in MedTech, right? There is a job for him in MedTech, just a matter of finding, you know, which company will hire for his skill set. We try to meet the veteran, you know, where they are, right? And then on the other end, you know, we have people who, you know, serve 20 years and are retiring. You know, they may have a master's degree or a PhD. We've met a couple of physicians. We met an Army surgeon last summer who was looking to branch out. So there's a wide variety. And we try to, again, match up skill sets with interest levels for what the companies are hiring. We don't really try to steer anybody down one particular road or another. I'm really just trying to goal set and match, you know, match goals and skills with what the hiring companies are trying to hire for.
Interesting. Well, just final question. I mean, we're talking, I know we're listened to by a lot of med tech companies out there, a lot of med tech folks out there. What are some things I haven't covered, or what is just some sort of broader messaging you want to share with the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say in general that, you know, veterans have a lot to offer, right? We have another slide that we show a lot in our presentations that we say, you know, here's a list of character strengths of military veterans and how that translates into med tech, right? So when we showed this list a year ago, there were a handful of characteristics on there, you know, discipline, leadership, organization, persistence, something like that, right? So every time we show that list, our partner company says, well, you left out something, right? You left out grit, you left out work ethic, you left out integrity, you left out, deferred gratification, right? Team player, things like that. So, you know, again, having served in the military, you know, I was exposed myself to a lot of different strengths from different backgrounds. And, you know, all those strengths and character traits, I think translate really well into med tech, right? So just because somebody doesn't have medical experience doesn't mean they can't be successful, you know, working in the medical technology world. I think anybody who, you know, that I worked with at AbbVie Med had to start somewhere, right? Whether it was at school or an internship or a volunteer job, or somebody just gave them the opportunity, but they were able to, you know, prove themselves. That would be my message, is that veterans have a lot to offer if given the opportunity.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you for your service during a really difficult time in our country's history, for sure. And congratulations on your success at AbbVie Med, and thanks for everything you're doing with MedTech Vets. Hopefully we'll keep the conversation going and have you involved in some future Device Talks meetings.
Yeah, awesome, Tom. Thanks for the opportunity. I enjoyed talking to you last week and again today, and hopefully we can keep in touch.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast, brought to you by Device Talks Minnesota. Make sure you join us at the Device Talks Minnesota meeting on June 11th. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com. Use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. It's going to be a great one-day event. Lots of networking, lots of tech talk, lots of strategy talk. Definitely the place you need to be on June 11th. So make sure you join us. I'm also beginning to fill out the agenda for Device Talks West. That's happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Registration is open. Our keynote speakers include Aman Jetty from Intuitive, Anna Zdwa from Moon Surgical, of Tim Schmid from Johnson & Johnson MedTech, Josh Macauer, and Ray Cohen. So we've got a full day, or 2 days actually, on October 15th and 16th. So I hope you will join us there. Go to west.devicetalks.com to join us at Device Talks West. Well, please make sure you share this podcast episode on LinkedIn. And when you do, connect with me. I'm Tom Salemi at Device Talks. Also, make sure you connect with Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, and Chris Newmarker of the Newmarkers Newsmakers, and of course, associate editor Sean Hooley. Make sure you also follow Device Talks and Mass Device on LinkedIn. We'd love to be able to send you news directly. Finally, I don't ask this very often. I may start asking it more often, but if you would leave a review on the podcast app that you're listening to this, give us a star ranking. Give us a sense of how we're doing. Let us know what we're doing well and what we're doing poorly. Well would be preferred, but poorly is okay. I guess these help the podcast in a lot of ways, and we're always always eager to make sure our podcasts find their way into the a new set of ears. So please help us with that. All right, folks, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.
We'll be right back.